Good morning, everyone. Even though I've been to Transylvania over 30 times, it's often a working trip for me. This past summer, my husband, Ron, flew to Nag Saban at the end of the first part of my visit. We were joining others from my home church to visit our partner village of Abashvova. On the way to meet Ron, my friend David Guerrero casually mentioned to me that the original Edict of Torda, the first recorded declaration of religious tolerance, was in the Brückenthaler National Museum in Nag Saban. The next day, we had the whole day to explore before meeting our fellow travelers, so Ron and I decided to see if we could find the edict. We spent 2 hours without success in the library of the museum. We were assisted by a friendly English-speaking librarian. Finally, she said to us, "During communism, the state confiscated many of our books and records. I think this is one of the ones they took. It must be in the National Archives. But tomorrow is a state holiday. You need to go right now." So an hour later, after dealing with the inevitable paperwork and passport checks, who are you, what do you want, forms to be filled out, we entered a room and spoke with the head librarian. We asked to see the official transcript of the minutes of the 1568 Diet at Torda. "We have that," the librarian said. "Are you interested in the Declaration of Religious Freedom?" "Yes, exactly," I said, and my heart beat a little faster. "Before you can see it, you have some paperwork to fill out." "Of course." A diet is an assembly of notes and of notables and delegates called together to make major political ecclesiastic decisions. The Edict of Torda was issued by King Janos Zsigmond, the first and only Unitarian king, or prince, or... It was customary in the 1500s that everyone share the religion of the ruling class. So the decree of freedom of choice of religion was a big deal. Francis David, or David Ferenc in Hungarian, the founder of the Unitarian Church, had converted King Sigismund and had convinced him that every person should be allowed to develop their own relationship to God. 20 minutes later, I held in my hands the original minutes of the Diet of Torda of 1568. The volume was bound and contained the handwritten minutes from the diets for several years. The paper was handmade, of course, thick and strong, not fragile at all. The minutes were all handwritten in beautiful script, archaic Hungarian, of course. The head librarian just handed us the bound volume. No formalities, no instructions, no limitations, no special requirements, other than that we were told we could not photograph it. We opened the book and turned the pages. No gloves. I held it in my hands. There, on pages 18 through 25, were the minutes of the diet at which King Janos Zsigmond had issued the first recorded declaration of religious freedom, the edict. Translated into English, it reads in part, "His Majesty in this diet reaffirms that in every place the preachers shall preach and explain the gospel, each according to his understanding of it. And if the congregation like it, well. If not, no one should compel them, for their souls would not be satisfied, but they shall be permitted to keep a preacher whose teaching they approve. Therefore, none of the superintendents or others shall abuse the preachers." Good news, right, Roger? "No one shall be reviled for his religion by anyone, and it is not permitted that anyone should threaten anyone else by imprisonment or removal from his post for his teaching. For faith is the gift of God, and this comes from hearing, which hearing is by the word of God. The first declaration of freedom of religious thought. I held it in my hands."
For the better part of the last 12 years, I have lived and worked in Transylvania, helping to facilitate the visits of North American UUs like you to their partners in Central and Eastern Europe. After 30 years in the telecommunications business, it's the best second career that I could ever imagine. We purposely label these trips pilgrimages. I realize that that word may be off-putting to some of you, too overtly religious, too churchy, but we chose pilgrimage consciously because we wanted to differentiate these journeys from regular travel, and to encourage our travelers, or pilgrims, if you'll allow me, to remain open to the possibility of personal transformation as they come in contact with their historical faith and with the people who have kept it alive for more than 400 years of very difficult history. I believe strongly that these journeys are important ones for UUs, experiencing the deep roots and rich history of our denomination, learning of our martyrs and legends and kings and queens, anchors and provides depth, I believe, to what for many of us is a very personal faith. During my tenure with the UUPCC, I have traveled with more than 2,000 people just like you. I've been witness to many moving and transformational moments, but the one I want to tell you about is my own. Like many of you, I am an escapee, if you will, from the Christianity of my parents. So when my children started asking about God, I went in search of a new religious home, found Unitarian Universalism in a very intellectual search based on due diligence. All in all, a very unremarkable story, one that I'm sure I share with many of you. What I didn't realize at the time was that in my haste to remove myself from the Christianity of my childhood, I'd abandoned many of the spiritual forms, practices, and vocabulary that had meaning for me. It has taken me this time in Transylvania to realize and to reclaim what was important and holy for me. I remember my first Unitarian communion in Transylvania. It was September of 2003. We were in a small rural village in a cold, dark church at the end of a long, bad dirt road. As was the tradition with this congregation, I stood in a circle with the old men around a small table on which was placed the bread and the wine and surrounded by local embroidery. The minister came to each of us in turn, first with the bread and then with a common chalice of white wine. He looked into our eyes while the women sang to us, to each other, and to God. As I was tearing up, I thought back to the sterile little plastic cups of grape juice and the wafers that was the communion of my youth. And I thought, these people got it right. This is not about the blood and body of Jesus. This was a community coming together, honoring their traditions, and thanking God for the harvest. For me, it was perfect. I knew then I'd found a second home and an altered path to the holy.
In September, Mary Fran and I made the journey, what we thought was a tour, and became the pilgrimage that John talked about. To be sure, we started out as tourists, and we had a wonderful, wonderful visit. And this is us up on the hill overlooking the village of Carund. And you can see the little white steeple up near Mary Fran's head, and that is our church. And it was very wonderful. We visited many churches, and I think all but one were built at least in the 1500s, if not before, and are still the churches where Unitarianism is practiced. We have 11 slides, if we can move on, Klaus. On our first day, we spent 3 days in the village of Carund at the home of Leventy and Erica, the family you saw before. And in the fall, on given Saturdays, they celebrate everybody's birthday who's going to be 50 that year. And so, and then the following Saturday, the people that will be 60, the following Saturday, those that will be 70s. And they are marched by the band to the Catholic Church and then over to the Unitarian Church. And it was a wonderful time. The next slide, please. This is the church. This is from the back of the church. What I'd like to point out is the clock. The clock now works. The clock did not work before, but they used the funds that we sent over earlier this year to have an operating clock. And they're very proud of that clock. And the bell rings in conjunction with the bells at the Catholic Church. This is the inside of the church. You will recognize Leventy from the previous Skype session. Go forward. One thing I wanted to point out is this is the Sakae region, and the Sakae was one of the seven tribes, and I'm not even going to try to get into that, but they are well known for their carvings. And if you can go to the next one, notice the intricate carvings of their gates, and they are throughout this period. They are beautiful. They have color in them that you, doesn't always show, but in the middle up here, you see the symbol of Unitarianism, which is the dove and the snake, and I know you can't see that from there. And speaking of intricate carvings, you see that this is our transport that took us up into the mountains for that first shot where you saw us up over the city of Quran. And it was a cold, windy day, I might add. So please move on. This is Leventy. This is the president of their church, the lay leader. He is in his ninth year as president. And folks, there's no way. But very nice people. And when I asked them what they'd like from our partnership, they said, we'd like to see you. They would like for you to come and visit them. And this is, if we go back, this is Reka and Leventy Jr. We were in their care one day for the entire afternoon. They were our translators. We taught them to play cards. They took us around town, and they treated us like family. This is the last known water wheel, I guess. There used to be many of them, but what I have to tell you is here, this is a restaurant. And they said, we're taking you out to dinner. Do you like trout? We said, yes. They said, good, because that's all they serve at this restaurant. And anytime you were in their hospitality, you have to be aware of perlinka, which is a very, very powerful liquid, clear liquid. I'm not going to say that you would get a hangover, but you would probably be chemically inconvenienced if you drank too much of it. This is another part of the restaurant. They have little cabana-like places out through there. And finally, this is a Hungarian flag. And what we haven't talked about is their tradition of being Hungarian, even though they are now in Romania. During communist rule, they came to the town to look for this flag. And I can't remember the town, but they came to find this flag. They got to the house where the flag was, but could not find it because the lady of the house laid the flag between the blankets and the bedspread on the bed. So they never did find that flag. And the next slide. This is Chilla, John Deal's wife. And this is Zoli, who was our driver. And they were just wonderful companions and wonderful tour guides for this trip. And we hope that you all will take this because they really do want to see you come and visit them face to face.
There are so many wonderful memories of this trip that we made. It's hard to pin down just certain parts of it. But for me, the highlight was the Sunday service of the weekend that we spent in our partner town. It was on Thanksgiving, which is celebrated on the last Sunday of September every year when the harvest has been brought in traditionally. And the whole congregation comes, every seat is taken. There must be in that church that you saw, there it is, but the seats on the side, about 300 people. They still sit separately, women on one side, men on the other, and they joke now about how that's because the women watch the men so that they become, that they're really serious about being in church today. I was raised as a UU since I was 7 years old, and my church was a Universalist church, which has had in those days many of these traditions. So it's taken me this long to get back to my original roots of more of a traditional Christian celebration. While we were there that Thanksgiving Sunday, one of the members of the congregation is a potter. Korund is known for its pottery, and she gave us to the church
a bowl or a vase and a dish for it to sit on. And this will stay with our church. At the moment, it's in Roger's study, and that may be where it stays so that it's preserved. It cannot be used with water inside because it's not glazed, but we can put dry flowers in it as we wish. Also, we have this as well, which is the blessing that is said, and those of you who come to the second service will hear our choir sing this blessing. Once it's hung somewhere around here, I will put a translation of it. It says, blessing is at the top, but where there is faith, there is love. Where there is love, there is peace. Where there is peace, there is blessing. Where there is blessing, there is God. Where there is God, there is no need. So that will hang with us. And we also have a plaque, which is, this is the symbol of Hungarian Unitarianism, the dove sitting on top of the globe of Earth, surrounded by a serpent. John Dale is better at describing what all of this means, but also once this hangs, we will have a translation beside it. Excuse me. Today we have our potluck lunch. I hope you'll come back, or I hope you'll stay for that. Part of the table will be a donation box for help in starting an education fund with our partnership. We talked about it yesterday, and hopefully we'll get that started this year to support children to go to a Unitarian high school. Very foreign to us, but we have Unitarian high schools in Transylvania, and sending a college student or two to seminary. There actually is a Unitarian seminary. So if I could have the slides of the children. There's a high school student picture already. Eniku is her name. I hope I'm saying that right. And the next picture is Abba. He is the cantor of our church, believe it or not. They have a cantor. He is the music director of the church, and he is going on to seminary. So students like this will be supported by this education fund. Hope to see you at the lunch.
I remember speaking to a UU minister one day. A recent slew of state elections had voted to deny the right of marriage to many loving couples. The minister said to me kindly, "I was saddened to hear that marriage has been denied to gay people in the United States." Sounds like a perfectly normal comment from a UU minister, doesn't it? Except that I was in a small village in the Philippines in the middle of nowhere. No paved roads, no running water, no secondary school, no electricity, often not even enough food. Yet somehow I found myself standing in a place where a UU voice was speaking out for the rights and needs of others. On business trips to South Africa, I often crashed the services at the small Cape Town congregation. Turns out they had been a leading voice, a leading white voice, in the fight to bring down apartheid at a time that meant you could be ostracized from your friends and family. I was in a place where a UU voice spoke up against oppression. Poverty, poor health, violence against women. The news from India often seems grim, unless you receive the insider's report from our Khasi Hills UU. The head of a UU school, our principal there, decided to use the Partner Church Council's community capacity building program to inspire people of all faiths there to insist that the government bring drinking water to the village so that their girls didn't have to spend 3 hours each day gathering water, so that they could go to school instead. he used the same process to convince the men of all faiths to raise their hands to labor collectively to build a new road so that they could transport agricultural products to market more quickly, so that they could earn a higher value and improve economic opportunity in their community. And in a country where women rarely take the lead, a group of Kasi UUs, inspired by their relationships with their UU female partners, have taken charge to improve the lives of women by facing head-on the issues of sexual violence, early marriage, and too many babies too quickly, straining young families and miring them forever in poverty. Less than 2 weeks ago, these women stood up, but they were not standing alone. The male leaders, not just the ministers, but the congregants of the UU churches stood with their women as they launched the White Ribbon campaign in the state of Meghalaya in northern India, a state that many Indians don't even know where it is. Our UUs stood together and they invited men of all faiths to pin on the white ribbon of respect for women rather than violence against them. It was another place very far away where UU voices proclaim that interfaith cooperation builds better communities. A team of young people, youth, children, a couple of adults in the mix, gather to clean the rivers, streets, and squares of their Transylvanian community, fed up with waiting for the post-communist regime and government to help them with environmental cleanliness. They even had to build their own trash cans with their own hands. Another place, another voice, speaking out to care for our planet. It was a February day, a long time ago. The snow was falling quickly, covering the rutted roads, and I was bundled up. The snow crunched beneath my boots. You know the sound, crunch, 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 as I toured the town. Maybe tour is an overstatement. It was a 10-minute stroll down a tiny street in tiny Abishvalva. And I went there when I got on that plane. I went there thinking I was visiting people with whom I had very little in common. I was wrong. What I didn't know then was that Abishvalva's mini main street would be my on-ramp to a wide, wide world of interconnection. It would take me to villages and communities and churches and homes and parties and christenings and weddings all over the world, in places and filled with people who believe that they must make the UU voice of justice heard, just like we do here in the United States. So I stand here this morning before you after more than a decade of partnership work with UUs around the world. And as I look out at the universe, here's what I can tell you. We are not alone. There are others just like us out there. May your walk through Korand bring as much meaning to your lives as the walk through Abishvalva has brought to mine. Thank you.
So this is a little girl named Esther, and she reminds me every time I see her of a poem, which is my faith, and says this: every child has known God, not the God of names, nor the God of don'ts, nor the God who never does anything weird, but the God who knows only four words and keeps repeating them, saying, "Come dance with me." Esther is not my child. She has a mother and a father and a big sister named Yulia and two grandmothers who live in her house in Gepesh, which is a very small village, rather near your new partner village of Korand in Hargita County in Transylvania. She does not, in the sense of family, need me or need our partnership between the Yarmouth Main Church and the Church of Gepesh in Transylvania. And yet, she is mine in particular, not only because of all the naughty, naughty adventures that we have had every year when I am there to visit her and the other children in her village, not only because of the hours of play and the hours of sitting very quietly and very seriously in church, which she is better at than I am by far, but because she is a Unitarian Hungarian in Romania, because she is an ethnic and religious minority in a country that really does not want her there. And I am a Unitarian Universalist in America, and so she is mine in particular to be witness to and most of all to love. That there is something in our partnership together, our chance to practice interdependence, this equality that we have to find a constant balancing point for. When we find that, we are justice makers. We are witnesses to each other's deepest, most innermost lives and needs. And in that, there is not only my freedom from oppression, my freedom from anything that will get in my American way, there is a freedom to make sure that others have every chance for play, for education, for religious freedom, and for identity that I have in my life with my children. And so I will say to you that I think your partnership with Karond is the most exciting thing, and that it does exactly what Levente, your partner church minister, has said of Christmas time, that it's Christmas, and it's the chance to be more human, and to be more human, what we do is we love. I wish you so much love in your partnership